Welcome to the infamous podcast, Bitch, I'm Not Well. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brandy.
And we're invested on taking you down to Crazy Town, where we talk about crazy bitches who are truly unwell. Today, our story is about Daniel Rakowitz.
Oh, I've never heard of him. Wait, is that the Harry Potter dude?
No. That's Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh.
This is Daniel Rakowitz, born way before Daniel Radcliffe.
Okay, cool.
Yes. Daniel is best known as the Butcher of Tompkins Square Park.
Yeah, he seems like a great person.
Well, we'll see. Let's dive in and find out.
All right, I'm ready.
All right. Daniel was born on Christmas Eve, December 24th, 1960, in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. The date has a significant meaning to Daniel other than being his birthday because he considered himself a divine being.
Oh.
When he was just 5 years old, he had an apparition saying that he saw three lords looking like Jesus floating out of the wall one at a time, each one wearing a different color robe, yellow, and blue. Later in life, Daniel states that he was born on Christmas Eve, 12/24/60, which equals the number 96.
Okay.
And that he has 18 letters to his name.
Wow, he can count high.
And he was born in the 21st hour, which is 9:02 p.m., which according to the Bible signifies the coming of the second Lord Jesus.
Really? It says that the second Lord Jesus is going to have 18 letters in their name?
Nope. I think all the total numbers maybe. Yeah, I don't know where he's going.
Oh, damn. Mine only has 15 letters.
He's a little batshit crazy, so we're just going to...
I'll have 18 letters if I use my maiden name and my married last name.
You sure do.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I'm sitting... with the second coming of Jesus, and it's a woman.
It's me.
I couldn't be prouder.
You should be very
proud. I'm very proud. Okay, so Daniel's father, Tony, served as a criminal investigator for the U.S. Army in Missouri and was described as being a straight-laced fellow and a real disciplinarian. That means he was strict as hell, y'all.
Sounds like he's fun.
Lots of fun.
Ain't nobody want to go spend the night at Daniel's house and get their little asses whipped.
Yeah, right.
You're up past 10 o'clock.
Paddling. Paddling's a-coming. When Daniel was only 2 years old, sadly, his mother suffered a heart attack and passed away, and Daniel stayed with her body for hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that broke my heart.
That's so sad.
Sometime in the late 70s, Daniel and his father moved to Rockport, Texas, where Tony became a deputy sheriff in a nearby town, Edna, Texas. It seems that it was in this place that everything took a downhill turn for Daniel.
Uh-oh.
From the age of 9 to 11, he was under psychiatric care and was forced to take Ritalin. He was bullied at school, and if he tried to defend himself, he was paddled for it. So, yeah,
that's his dad.
That's his dad being a big stickler.
If somebody's going to beat up on you, you need to be able to defend yourself.
You have to defend yourself. When he was 14, he was given shock treatments.
Oh my gosh.
I could not find any comments from teachers or fellow students for opinions on this. Maybe it was just due to his delusional thoughts of being the second coming of the Christ. I don't know.
Maybe. I know when I was younger, some kids that were just like, they just had too much energy. Their parents would put them on Ritalin just to calm them down. And it's like, did you really need to be on it? Or were you just hyper?
Yeah, but that was a while back. That was like before we even knew what ADHD was or ADD was.
Yeah, I don't even know if it existed then.
He says it did. When was Ritalin even invented? I don't even know.
1970, it was first given to him as a trial.
Apparently so.
So shock therapy. So he was like put into an institution.
I guess. I don't know that he stayed in an institution, but yeah.
Oh.
Shock therapy at 14.
That's so sad.
The tension between Daniel and his father peaked when his dad found marijuana in his room.
Oh, just chill out, Dad.
Tony took him down to the Rockport station and booked him for possession.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
This is why we can't have nice things, Tony.
This is it. Can't have nothing, Megan Turpin. At 19, Daniel enlisted in the Army. Mm-hmm. He became an expert rifleman and spent 14 weeks in Army law enforcement school. I'm not sure how he made it through basic training.
So he was mentally institutionalized, and they thought it was okay to give him a rifle mm-hmm. and make him a rifleman and mm-hmm. military police.
Like I said, I'm not sure if he was institutionalized, but he was. He declares that he was given shock treatment therapy at the age of 14. Uh-huh. And that's, I don't understand how he made it through there, plus the marijuana possession charge.
Yeah.
So after his discharge, though, which doesn't say if it's honorable or dishonorable, maybe they found out.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he failed like the psychiatric part of the test or something.
I would think that that would happen before you
were given the weapons.
Were given a rifle. Yeah. Please, God. Please.
Can you not test my mental stability until after you give me the bazooka?
Something.
And let me shoot it at least twice. Then you can take it away and then test me.
I just want to shoot it.
I just want to. That's the whole reason I signed up for this. Pew, pew, pew. My luck, I'd blow myself up because I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to use it. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. How do you unload this?
Maybe I look down the barrel. Nope, that's not the right way.
That was the wrong answer.
That was the wrong answer.
After his discharge, he applied for a job as deputy alongside his father, but he was denied the position, most likely due to the marijuana charge, or marijuana, like I like to call it.
Do you think his dad had a say?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Dad wouldn't even hire you.
Yeah. So Daniel later spoke of taking over Texas. I want to do everything as a Texas sheriff, and I'm going to have many counties where a lot of people that smoke marijuana can come. My gosh.
Man, he would love it now.
Jeez, wouldn't he, though?
He would.
Living his biggest life right now.
His non-cannibalistic life.
Mm.
Hopefully.
Ugh.
No cannibal. Just smoke pot. No cannibal.
Sorry, Daniel. Daniel also stated on April... Okay, and this is him saying this, okay?
Okay.
On April 3rd, 1983, I made a prayer that I would have a dream to learn future events. 6 days later, I did indeed have the dream, and it told me I would come into total possession of a 14-year-old girl who 2 weeks later became my wife. And before we got married, I said, according to the dream, you're going to leave me, and I will go to New York and find a blonde-haired woman and get married. Someday, I come back. According to the dream, you come back to me, but you have another man's child. What wow. a nut job. So the police do confirm that Daniel was married to a Mexican girl in Texas, and he was very upset when they split up and had high hopes of getting back together. So,
oh my gosh.
And she was young.
Do you think it was like consensual or like he brainwashed her or something?
I don't know.
And family realized who he was and took their daughter back. I was like, get the hell away from my kid,
who
you crazy.
Who knows? I mean, she was a Mexican girl. She might have, I mean, this was back in the 70s. Maybe she crossed the border and he got a hold of her. Who knows? I don't know.
That's so, 14 is so young.
Oh, yeah. In 1985, when Daniel was around 24, he moved to New York City, living in the East Village, and was well known there for openly selling cannabis and methamphetamines in the park.
Entrepreneur. Okay.
Yes. He also had his pet rooster, named Rooster,
what?
Perched on his shoulder or in his knapsack with its head just poking out, his head poking out.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Oh, Rooster, come on, let's go, boy.
Come on, Rooster. Many people remember Daniel to this day due to his uniqueness and the fact that he went out of his way to make his presence known. He had a thick Texas accent. And he would hold long speeches concerning the power of Satan and crucifixion.
I have a feeling Daniel referred to himself in the third person.
He often did.
Daniel will walk on water one day.
Daniel is a god.
Daniel is not happy. Daniel does not like spaghetti. Who the hell is Daniel? It's me. I am
the Daniel.
You should know the Daniel. I have been preaching about myself all day. Have you not listened? Rooster, peck his eyes out. My first follower.
My first follower. His only follower.
His only one. God, he ain't got nowhere else to go.
That's true. Poor Rooster. Several people had run-ins with Daniel, and their opinions of him were from one end of the spectrum to the other. But one consistent opinion was that he was so deep into his own religion and his own world and out of touch with reality that it was just like everybody knew him. Like he was just the crazy guy, you know?
He's the guy screaming on the corner.
He was. So I got some quick stories from those who had direct contact with Daniel in New York, and I'm not going to say any names. I'm just going to go over like a few things.
Okay. I can't wait.
Okay. So one guy says, Daniel thought that he was God. He started his own religion, which he called the Church of the 966. He talked a lot about animal sacrifice and would write 966 on walls in chicken blood as a sort of calling card. Daniel believed that while the number 666 represents Satan in the Bible, Satan has transformed over generations and was now represented by the number 966.
Well, I'm glad Daniel thinks for Satan and for God. It's good that he knows everything.
But you know, at first, whenever he was little and he's seeing, you know, these Jesus formations, and then he's like, I'm the second coming of Christ. Well, Christ is not satanic.
No. I wonder if the three people he saw were like the three wise men.
Oh, good question. I don't know. Although Daniel was friendly, he was always paranoid about visitors where he lived. And Daniel spoke often about his constituents or followers in his church and about his land in Colorado where he was going to build his church and grow marijuana there. So he was like paying this man out of the blue for this property in Colorado. And I don't think there was even any paperwork.
He gave him a monopoly card. Here you go. This is the deed to your land.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Okay, wait at least 3 months before you head to Colorado. Let me get fully out of there first.
Yep, right? Yeah. So, and then he really didn't have any constituents. He had Rooster.
Well, you got to start somewhere.
You do. Okay. My bad.
Number one Rooster.
I wonder if he had a little jersey.
I bet he did. Daniel is number one.
966. Oh, yeah. Number one.
Daniel is 966. Yay.
So others had an opinion of him just being a wacko. And all he ever talked about was killing.
Whew.
It amazed people that he talked about killing as much as he did. Daniel was described as being a not-so-great marijuana salesman and that he mostly gave away or smoked away his product.
There goes your profit.
Right? He was a jovial-looking guy, but he also appeared to look isolated and lonely. And in my opinion, he kind of did look like a Jesus kind of guy, you know?
He had, like, the hair and the goatee.
Had the long
and
hair. And, he was a nice enough looking man, you know, but he looked like some of the images that you see of Jesus. So, yeah. Another outtake was that Daniel had charisma, but admittedly, it took people a couple of minutes to realize that he might seem like a kook, but he was perfectly harmless. He always managed to get people to stop and listen to him. The most popular opinion was that someday he's going to kill somebody.
Oh, okay. Well, definitely want to be best friends with him. We should join his church.
Yes, let's do it.
Maybe if we follow him, he won't kill us.
Daniel was well known for his animal sacrifices and the fact that he liked to kill animals and killed his pets constantly. He went through a lot of cats.
Oh, my gosh.
And at least three dogs. There was, however, one dog, a white English terrier, that everyone knew and remembered. He starved the dog, but ended up selling it before he killed it.
Poor dog.
I know it. Maybe
you can come live with me.
Poor babies.
You can come to the cat haven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. If you can find a spot.
If you got a spot, you're welcome.
Okay, so there's a person that we'll call Lynn. She recalls going into a building on Suffolk Street one night with Daniel and a large group of people. She said Daniel had some really cool ideas for what he wanted to do with the building, like he owned it. He wanted to make the first two floors housing for handicapped people, but it just didn't go off. Well, maybe that's because he didn't own the building. He used to say that he
pulled out plans written on napkins. So this is where the bathroom's going to be.
Yeah.
We're going to have the ramp here.
Yes. It was a great idea, but you got to have some, you got to own the place.
He pulled out his Monopoly card.
Oh, God.
I definitely own this house on Suffolk Place.
Park Place.
Park Place. This is definitely Park Place.
Yeah. Broadway. Got it.
You owe this much money to get in here.
But officer, I have the title. I have the deed. He used to say that he wanted to murder the cops and give their money to the poor. Now, like, cops make anything. They don't make a damn dime.
Okay. You're not robbing the rich to give to the poor.
Yeah, that's
the... They're there to protect you.
Yeah, but you know, back in the 70s, oh, Lord. Peace, love, war. We hate old cops. We hate the military.
Yeah.
So he was going to start this cult and have five children with each of 25 women so that he could create his master race.
Wait, he was going to have five children with 25 women. So he was going to have like 125 kids?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Oh my God.
Right? So Daniel was a follower of Hitler and believed firmly in the master race theory.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Daniel used to burn incredible amounts of pot, and that's why everyone hung out with him. Popular opinion was that when you get stoned and listen to him ranting and raving, it gets really hysterical, and that he is amazing to listen to when you're stoned.
I could see that.
I don't know.
I mean, I wouldn't know, but I mean, that would be the only time you would find him talking about a master race and murdering animals. Funny, I guess, is if you're completely blitzed out of your mind.
Completely.
That's, I mean, you would have to have really, you need really, really need that pot if you would sit there and listen to him. Like,
that'd be a challenge.
Like, what do you want more? Do you want your sanity or do you want some pot?
I want my sanity.
How desperate are you? I know. I'd be like, I'm taking my sanity
later.
Getting
my sanity back.
I'm taking Rooster and the dog and I'm leaving.
Yeah. So one time there was a hot pot party and not a cheesy dip hot pot party. Like, you know, smoking pot.
Oh, I was thinking like the Tupperware sale things. I was like, he was selling Tupperware too?
Hot pot. Well, he was a go-getter.
Oh, well, he was. It's got that.
But he used all his Tupperware, so he didn't get to sell any of it.
Sell anything. We're going to use it all. Sorry, guys.
So he had a bunch of weed on the table, and Rooster jumped up on the table and scattered the pot, and Daniel started beating the shit out of the rooster.
Oh, my gosh.
Someone jumped on Daniel to stop him from beating the poor bird, and everyone else was grabbing Rooster and yelling, "Liberate the rooster! Liberate the rooster!"
I like these people. Daniel, you can't kill your only follower.
That's right. He was a number one. He was your first follower.
He even has the jersey.
All right. Let's get back to the story.
He's going to have your baby.
Now that you've heard the mixed opinions of Danielle.
Yeah, he's either, he's crazy and he's gets that pot.
So. Or he's crazy.
He get free pot.
So the beginning of the end of this story starts with Sylvia and her boyfriend, Sean, both from Morris Plains, New Jersey. Sylvia was a 27-year-old nursing student and Sean was a 25-year-old electrician. They'd been living together in a cramped two-bedroom apartment at 700 East 9th Street for a couple of months. Sylvia met Daniel when he sold her pot in Washington Square Park. Daniel at the time was 28 years old and a part-time cook and marijuana dealer who was sleeping in Tompkins Square Park, so he was homeless. After a few visits with Sylvia, they agreed to have Daniel move in to cover half the apartment's rent at $500 a month. So Daniel, Rooster, and his three cats moved in on July 7th, 1988.
And they weren't scared of him?
No. No.
Oh, they must have had a positive opinion of old Daniel.
Well, maybe she just stayed stoned.
But she must have.
Scary if you're a nursing student.
But oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Sylvia, or an electrician.
Oh, my God. That's even, I don't know which one's worse. You just blew my mind.
Dude, is this wire blue? Oh. Is it red?
Oh, touch and see what happens.
Yeah, that'd be funny. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. All right. Uh-oh. So Sylvia says that she saw an immediate change in Daniel. Like he felt like he was a normal person at last. He had a home. He could take a shower. He had a big TV, which he became fixated with and would watch all day and night. I mean, he's missed out on a lot of shows.
Probably watching Days of Our Lives and Jerry Springer. Ricky Lake, you are the father. Or no, what was that? Who is that?
Ricky Lake?
Maury
Povich?
Yes, he was the one who was like, you are the father. You are not the father.
Ricky Lake was a female.
Well, yeah, she had a talk show too.
Yes, she did, but she can't be a father.
No, but they would always do the paternity test on
Ricky
there.
Ricky Lake, you are the father, you said.
Oh, well, sorry, Ricky, you're not the father.
Ricky, you're not the father.
There's no way you could be the father.
What? I'm devastated.
Oh my God.
Cheater.
I'm so sorry. I really thought you were.
Yeah. So Sylvia remembers how the rooster would cackle and crow all night long. And one night she told Daniel she couldn't listen to the rooster anymore. So he took a sock, put it over the rooster's head, and the rooster would lie on its back with its legs straight up.
Oh, my God.
Sylvia realized the rooster still in this position about 10 hours later, asking Daniel if the rooster was dead. But Daniel said, no, he's just in a trance. And he'd take the sock off, and the rooster would pop up and start walking around. Put the sock back on, and the rooster would just get back on his back with his legs up in the air. Like, it's the weirdest thing.
So weird.
I kind of need to find a chicken now and do that.
Yeah.
Just for a second. Just
I want to know if this works.
I need to know. If you've tried it, let us know. I don't know if I could do it to a real chicken. That seems kind of cruel.
Yeah, it does. It might have been the smell of that sock. So bad.
When there's a fungus among us.
Ugh.
Daniel would often wake up in the morning and head for Key Food on 4th and B Avenue, I guess. Hanging out by the front door, he would ask people for donations. Often strangers shopping at the store would just buy him what he asked for, like chicken, potatoes, butter, bread, vegetables. He would return to the apartment with 30 or 40 pounds of food, cook it all up, and bring it down to Tompkins Square and feed the homeless there.
Oh, that's nice.
Sometimes he even showed up with breakfast, making stacks of pancakes for everyone. He even used to get the syrup from the people in the street. Like, they never paid for any, he never paid for any food.
Huh.
And he was doing this good deed, you know?
Huh.
Sylvia and Sean often helped cook and serve and said it was lots of fun and the food was good. They said Daniel had a passion to help the homeless since he experienced firsthand what it was like, obviously.
Yeah.
So he had a soft spot for the homeless people.
Well, it was good that he was feeding them.
Mm-hmm. Sylvia and Sean stated that life with Daniel was not always easy. No. And that his incessant babbling would have driven almost any roommate crazy. Sylvia said he used to go off on his trip saying, "I am the Lord of Lords, and by 1996, I'm going to be president. And by 1992, my followers are going to take over." Now, how's he going to be president in 1996? But in 1992, his followers are going to take over.
It takes him 4 whole years to be president even after they take over?
I guess.
Your followers aren't great.
Best thing he says is, if they think Hitler was something, they haven't seen anything yet.
Oh, no.
Okay.
All That's right. freaking scary.
Yep. Soon after Daniel moved in, Sylvia and Sean experienced problems in their 3-year relationship. You think?
No way.
Couldn't have been Daniel. Around July 20th, 1988, they broke up and Sean moved out.
Oh, no.
Shortly after, Sylvia decided to move out and leave the apartment to Daniel. Knowing that he wouldn't be able to afford the lease on his own, they started looking for a new roommate. Daniel also did not want his name on any paperwork.
Oh, gosh.
So he could not sign any kind of leases or anything. I mean, he wasn't the most creditworthy person. You know, he wasn't very appealing to a landlord.
He was off the grid before he was even on the grid.
Yes, but he just wanted to remain anonymous.
You don't need my
on
name.
Paper.
You don't need my number.
Not anonymous in the park, obviously.
Everybody knew him in the park and on the street corner screaming
everybody
at you.
Did. Yeah, everybody knew him. About 2 weeks later, according to the police, Daniel met Monica Birrell, a 26-year-old modern dancer. She was actually a topless dancer.
Oh.
In Tompkins Square Park.
I was thinking like almost a mime, like modern dancing, interpretive. I think it's interpretive dancing.
With the, well, yeah. So Monica was a slender, dirty blonde hair. Oh, dirty blonde hair.
He found his blonde.
I thought she was just dirty. No.
Dirty girl.
She a dirty girl. So she was a dirty blonde-haired girl from St. Gallen, Switzerland. Monica had earned a teaching and choreography certificate from the Sigurd Leader School and recently studied at the Martha Graham School. Though she had a reputation for dating adventurously, her friends say that she was a smart girl and she seemed pretty professional, had a good head on her shoulders. The girl wasn't stupid and she wasn't crazy.
I would call dating Daniel very adventurous.
Dating Daniel.
That is very, very adventurous.
A new podcast, Dating Daniel.
Dating Daniel. We could read stories about people who suck at dating.
Yes.
Yes.
In late April, Monica had moved from 93 Orchard Street to 171 Avenue B, but was already looking for another place to live when she met Daniel.
Oh, no.
Score! So he took her home, made his pitch, and she accepted.
I bet it was Rooster. She saw Rooster and was like,
"Oh,
I love you. I'm coming home.
Yeah.
I'm going to be your mama."
Well, they celebrated with a couple of joints from Daniel's stash.
God, Daniel, why do you do drugs? He didn't take DARE.
He did what?
He didn't take DARE.
DARE?
DARE. Oh. Drug Abuse Resistance Education.
They didn't have DARE.
No, they didn't have DARE.
We didn't have DARE. All right. So Sylvia first met Monica before the lease changed hands. That night, Daniel had been slow to answer her knock, so she took it upon herself to let herself in, as usual.
Bust up in there.
But when the door swung open, he was zipping up his fly. And Sylvia says he'd never had a woman up there.
Oh.
And she had never known him to be with a woman or seen him with a woman. And Daniel introduced the two, and it was then that Daniel told Sylvia Monica would be moving in and taking over the lease.
Well, hello, Monica.
Hello, Monica.
Hello.
What are your intentions, darling?
We need to sit down and talk about your intentions with my roommate.
Monica and her belongings arrived in the first week of August, according to Sylvia. Daniel had cleaned the apartment immaculate just for her.
I wonder if it really was. I bet it had chicken shit in there somewhere. Or rooster shit.
Can you imagine? Sylvia asked Monica the next day, because she thought Daniel was playing a joke, if the two had had a sexual relationship. And Monica confirmed that they had. Yes.
Did she say, bow, chicka, bow, bow?
They did the deed. Woo! It wasn't long before Sylvia's suspicions became reality. Monica broke off the romance almost immediately.
Uh-oh.
And she began bringing other men to the apartment.
What?
Yes.
One evening,
she invited a Rastafarian, which is an Abrahamic religion that was developed in Jamaica during the 1930s and combines Protestant Christianity, mysticism, and a Pan-African political consciousness. I don't know what
I've never heard of any of this.
Yeah, a Rastafarian. I've heard of Rastafarian somewhere, but I didn't know what it meant.
Not going to lie, I thought it was an animal. Or maybe a disease. Well, actually, I have never heard of it before in my life. Okay. I don't know what the hell it is. I'm assuming it's a religion.
Okay.
Because you told me it was.
It's a cryptid.
A cryptid.
So she invited this guy to stay the night, and Daniel inadvertently surprised them. Like, he didn't expect this guy to be sitting in their house, you know? So later he confided in Sylvia that Monica had a black man in there.
Oh, no.
And he looked hurt and mad because that's one of the people that he hated.
What?
Gays and blacks.
Oh, my gosh.
To him, that was the worst insult you could give him. Damn. Which, I mean, we already know that Hitler's his idol.
That's true. I don't know what I was expecting.
Right.
You can't expect much from a Hitler idoler.
Monica's friends who visited her at the apartment were alarmed by Daniel's ravings and urged her to throw him out.
Yeah.
In mid-August. I would
move out. You don't want him to know where you live. You leave and don't tell him.
Exactly. Well, He just ranted. Like, they just thought he was cuckoo machu. They didn't think, you know, further than that, I guess.
Yeah, I remember having people preach at college, and they were really scary. They would scream at you when you walked by. Yes. Like, they would be on certain corners and, like, screaming at you and waving signs and weird. It was really weird.
That throws so many people off of Christianity.
Yeah. I really don't even know what they were, but they were scary.
So mid-August, about a week after moving in, so she was there like a whole damn week. She took their advice and told Daniel that she wanted him out in 2 weeks.
She said, get the fuck out.
She did. Rakowitz begged and pleaded with Monica, trying to make some type of arrangement where he could stay. He did not want to be homeless again. So Sylvia remembers for 3 days, Daniel would go through periods of he was going to kill Monica. And then 5 minutes later, he would say, no, I love her. I'm not going to kill her. I'm going to kill her. No, I love her. I can't kill her. I love her. She's dead. I'm going to kill her. So neither Sylvia or Sean took him seriously, partly because of all the wild things he'd said in the past, and partly because neither of them had ever seen Daniel become violent. He talked a crazy streak, but he always behaved himself. Around August the 12th, 1988, Sylvia told Monica that Daniel said he was going to kill her. And she just kind of laughed, and she went up to Daniel in front of Sylvia and said to Daniel, I'll kill you first.
Oh, yeah. Let's antagonize the murderer.
Antagonize him, please.
That seems like a great idea. What'd you do? Pull some feathers off a rooster next?
Meanie.
Oh, come on, Monica.
On the evening of Thursday, August 17th, 1988, Daniel walked Sylvia to the PATH train as they shared a joint. He told Sylvia that he couldn't take Monica anymore. He'd had enough, and he'd planned to kill her the next day. He asked Sylvia to come back and help him get rid of the body. She said, are you crazy? And she informed him that she wasn't going to help him with anything, and don't be ridiculous. You know, just kind of brush it off again, because he's been saying forever he's going to kill her. No, he's not. He loves her. He hates her. He loves her. He hates her.
Monica, what kind of question is that? Are you crazy? The answer is obviously yes.
Oh, Sylvia.
The answer is yes, still. He is crazy. He is batshit crazy. You have lived with him. You know. Go and tell Monica to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Run.
She stated that she thought Daniel was just really nervous and scared of being homeless again, which I guess I would too.
I still don't think I would say I'm going to kill somebody.
No. But I would be nervous about
it. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be homeless. I think especially in New York. It'd be cold.
I would duct tape my damn mouth. and just like go to my room, like,
lock the door, move the TV into my bedroom.
I don't need to eat or drink or pee or poop or anything. I'll do that at the bus station.
Let me know when you're out of the apartment. Knock three times. I'll wait 5 minutes and I'll leave the room. When you're coming back, knock three times. I'll go back in my room. We don't even need to see
knock
each other.
Three times. And I'll see you in the morning. Voice on the pipes. I don't know. All right. So Sylvia didn't return to the apartment on Friday because she says she really didn't think about it. Like, with all his craziness, she
disregarded
it.
It was just like normal for him to say shit like this. So right. Why would you think it was?
She did not.
Yeah.
So on Saturday night, she was passing by the apartment and noticed that it was dark, and she knew that something was wrong because there was always like a TV on or something in there.
Oh, yeah, because he likes his TV.
Yeah. So she went up the stairwell and she did hear the TV, which was really loud. Mm. She opened the door and the TV was in the kitchen, which is probably why she couldn't see it from the living room window on the street.
Oh, man, please tell me it was like extension cord plugged into the living room. It was like a cord.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. So the house was very dim. She noticed Monica's door was locked. So she knocked, but no one answered. So she went to the kitchen and found a pot on the stove. She looked inside the pot and Monica's head was in the pot, all burnt up with her eyes closed.
Oh, God. I was not expecting that.
Yes.
Whew.
Yes.
Okay.
Head in the pot on the stove.
Oh, God. Okay.
After the shock of seeing Monica's blackened head in a pot on the stove, Sylvia walked towards the bathroom and saw in the bathroom what appeared to be a rib cage with everything off.
Oh, my God.
All she could see were the bones, like the ribs and the bones. And the tub was full of blood and guts.
Oh, gross. Sylvia, I'm sorry. After the head, I would have run. Like, this, I'm out. Daniel, you're on your own. I'm calling the cops.
Mm-hmm. Well, she did run to the phone booth, and she called Daniel's beeper. And then he called her back, and she said, "Daniel, you did it?" And he said, "You saw it, Sylvia?" And she said, "Yeah." And he was like, "I'm sorry you had to see it, but I had to do it." And he then said, "Come up to the apartment and smoke a joint with me." And she was like, "Daniel, meet me in Tompkins Square. I'm not going back to the apartment." So he met her in the park. And he was just apologizing, like, "I'm so sorry I had to do it. I had to do it." And he started telling her what happened. So Daniel told her that he was not alone when it happened. He said he was with a friend from a satanic church in Brooklyn. That Friday evening, according to Daniel, Monica told him he had to be out by the next day or she would have him physically removed by a friend with a pit bull. Then she went into her bedroom, but heard Daniel's friend say, why haven't you killed her yet? And Monica came back out into the living room and started yelling at his friend. And his friend said, "Why are you yelling at me? You don't know me." She replied, "But I know Daniel and you're his friend." Now, the police don't think that there was another person there. They think that this is something in his mind, you know, like his mind is his self is his friend telling him to
do this.
Yeah. Oh. So Sylvia guesses this is what set Daniel off because he was terrified about losing his home. She's like, "You're out by tomorrow. I will have you removed." So Daniel said that when Monica walked away from him, he wrapped an extension cord. Maybe the TV was plugged in with an extension cord.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So he grabbed an extension cord and wrapped it around her neck and then strangled her with his hands. Daniel said that Monica scratched him and showed Sylvia a long scratch, like scratch marks down his arm. According to Sean and Sylvia, Daniel had choked her to death, and when she was dead, he stomped on her head 10 times and stabbed her over 30 times.
Oh my gosh.
He put her in the bathtub, cut off her head, arms, and legs, and used her chest as a carving board.
Oh, Daniel, you're
He told them that he had eaten the brains and that his friend had eaten a part of her too, which maybe he was there, maybe he wasn't. We don't know. He had a 13-inch carving knife and used a metal pole, a solid steel pipe, to break her bones.
Oh my gosh.
He boiled her while he was cutting her up. He hadn't finished yet. He was cutting her up into tiny little pieces, like thousands of tiny pieces, and flushing her flesh down the toilet.
Oh, my gosh.
To get rid of her. Apparently, Sylvia did not go to the police with this information.
What?
And a few days later, saw Daniel in Tompkins Square Park.
Oh my God, Sylvia.
Daniel told her it was starting to smell up there.
Okay, you
and this
think?
Is a few days. So you did the story like last week about the little girl that was trapped in her bed for 9 days, supposedly, and couldn't smell. Well, 2 days later, and he's already processed the majority of her body, and it was starting to smell. She told him that he was going to get caught and locked up, and she was worried that they would put him in a psychiatric hospital. She didn't want to see that happen to him and thought he'd had enough of a raw deal in life, I guess.
I think a psychiatric hospital would be better than an electric chair. It would also be better than letting him out on the streets murdering more people.
Right?
Come on, Sylvia, get your shit together.
Yeah, I agree.
There's other drug dealers in New York.
Daniel replied that he was going to clean it all up so she could go up there. And a few days later, he called her to tell her it was okay to drop by.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. On my way.
Monica's boiled skull was still in the apartment with the skin peeled off of it. Sylvia stated that all that was left of her head was a clean skull and that Daniel would have conversations with it. When he got mad at Monica, he would spit on her skull and say, "Well, bitch, at least you'll always have a home."
Oh, my gosh.
And he told Sylvia that she looks more beautiful now than she ever did.
Oh, my gosh.
On Tuesday, August 22nd, 4 days after Monica's murder, Sean stopped by the apartment to buy some reefer from Daniel.
Okay.
He told Sean that he and Monica had fought Friday night and that he had broken her nose. During his visit, Sean saw meat in the frying pan and in the freezer.
Mm-mm.
Now, he didn't know, like, what had happened.
He didn't eat any, did he?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
Sean returned to the apartment on Saturday, August 26. So that's another 4 days. It seems like they got to go get a refill every 4 days. And after Sylvia had finally told him of Monica's murder. Now looking back, Sean believes the meat was actually pieces of Monica and that he had eaten her. And Sylvia stated that Daniel told her he had in fact eaten parts of her. And he also told Sean that he was going to feed Monica to the homeless people in the park.
No.
Oh, yes.
Man, and this is August in New York. They probably don't have air conditioners, so I bet it was stinking in there.
Oh, God.
How did you like to be that neighbor?
By this time, Daniel had cleaned up everything, but there was a smell in the apartment. Sean told him he could smell death, and Daniel was surprised at this, questioning, "Can you really smell it? You can smell it?
Dude, you can smell it when you walk down the street.
You really smell it?" So Daniel eventually took the bucket containing the skull and bones, thinking that was the remaining smell, to a storage facility at 43rd Street.
So wait, he's worried about being homeless, but he has an apartment and he has a storage shed?
He has a storage facility.
Oh my God.
Well, I don't know if he paid for it, okay? Well, maybe he did. I don't know. So he went to the storage facility at 43rd Street and 11th Avenue and later moved the bucket to the baggage check facility at Port Authority. Okay, so like at the port, I guess you have these lockers where you can rent.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, so he rented a locker, I guess.
I was thinking like airport security. Like put your bag, like you put the bucket on the conveyor belt?
Yes.
Oh, God. He's not getting on that boat.
Uh-uh. You got to remove the metal cavity.
I'm sorry.
You have to remove that. That won't pass.
Yeah, no, that is not silver. That's metal. So you're going to take it out. I put metal and silver the same thing. No, just take it out. It's not going to pass.
Take off your watch. Take out that metal cavity on that bone. And
take the pipe out your butt. Send it back through.
Send it back through, please. Sylvia says that she wasn't that frightened of Daniel and that she was more concerned of what was going to happen to him.
How are these people still friends with him? Like, how are you not frightened? You know he's batshit crazy.
Yeah. She says she told Daniel that she would never tell on him and never went forward and said anything, even knowing people would think that's a really shitty thing to do, which we do, Sylvia. Yeah. She thought if people realized what kind of person Daniel was and what he wasn't because of what was done to him, that they might understand why she didn't want to say anything. She didn't want Daniel to hurt anyone. She just believed that he only needed psychiatric and psychological help, which he very much did.
He does need some help.
You didn't help him any by not going to the police.
No. Why would you think you're helping him by, like, you're allowing him to do this?
Mm-hmm.
You're not just ruining other people's lives. His life is being ruined too.
That's right. Meanwhile, Daniel was on the other end of the earth, like bragging about the murder to anyone who would listen. He even bragged before he did it. He even asked others for help getting rid of her body parts, that he was scared of getting caught or turning himself in, and he didn't know what to do. The rumors around Tompkins Square grew increasingly bizarre that Daniel fed her to the homeless. But when the rumors hit the newspapers, the homeless people in the park quickly realized that Daniel had in fact served them soup shortly after the murder.
Oh.
And I believe one person even had a finger in their soup.
No!
Yes, ma'am.
Oh.
Yes, ma'am. Daniel lived in the apartment alone for a week or two following the murder, but Sylvia urged him to move, warning him that sooner or later the cops would be coming by. Daniel took her advice and moved in with another girl uptown.
Oh. And now, she's a real shitty person.
Yeah. Now, this pissed Sean off because Daniel killed Monica for nothing, stating that there's no right reason for a person to be murdered. But after all that, Daniel killed Monica because he didn't want to be homeless and he needed that apartment. But then he eventually left the apartment and moved in with someone else.
I didn't think about it like that.
So Sean was so angry that he spilled the story to the building superintendent, who told the detectives. The detectives met Sean at the apartment to question him and search for evidence. On the door of the apartment, they saw graffiti written in black magic marker. Is it soup yet? And welcome to the Charlie Geen's Spawn Ranch East. Now, Charlie Geen is a combination of two mass serial murderers, Charles Manson and Ed Gein.
Mm.
The Spawn Ranch was the home of the Manson family.
Oh.
So that was the significance of that. So, on a steam pipe in the bathroom was scribbled, "Broken hearted about you." And the hearted was actually a heart with a jagged line running through it. But they did not find any evidence of a murder in the apartment.
Damn, he was able to clean it up?
I guess.
That's crazy.
I guess. Initially, neither the superintendent nor the detectives believed a word of Sean's story, but they paged Daniel on his beeper, and he went down to the 9th precinct to answer the questions. He didn't admit or deny that he had killed Monica Buell.
Did he say no comment?
No. He did, however, say something along the lines of, "If I'd have killed her, I would have cut her up into lots of pieces and flushed her down the toilet."
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
After making that statement, that Sunday, September the 17th, the detectives went back to the apartment and ripped the toilet apart, sadly finding nothing. Now, Sean was determined for Daniel to go down, and he told the police that he kept a storage bin near the Port Authority bus station.
So they didn't find anything in the toilet?
Mm-mm.
You would, like, well, no. I don't know how toilets or septic tanks or anything like that work, but, like, I wonder, like, the apartment had a big septic tank, and, like, they would have looked in there, they would have found...
Well, this is New York. I think there's a septic system for the city. Like, there's not one septic tank per building, I don't think.
That would make sense.
So once it goes, it's just like... Who knows where it goes? So, you know, if it were, like, down here, an individual home, you could just go dig up the septic tank.
Yeah.
And search for body parts, but
That would be a real shitty job.
Meat, literally. So, Sean was determined for Daniel to go down for this, and he told the police that he kept a storage bin near the Port Authority bus station. Sylvia says that the detectives came back to the apartment to get a statement from her, and told her that they already had written statements implicating Daniel from both Sean and Lori Arnold, who is a neighbor who lived across the hall from Daniel, but believes that they lied about this and that she was tricked into confessing what she knew because she promised Daniel, "I'm not saying a word to anybody."
They should have arrested her too.
They should have. So she was told that they were going to lock him up anyway and that they already knew what had happened, and she believed it, so she told them everything. 5 hours later, they picked up Daniel, and Sylvia said he asked for help when they arrested him. He said it to a detective, and the detective told me that he said, "I need some help." So it must have really dawned on Daniel that he did wrong. And she feels like Daniel released the burden on his soul. Sha baby.
I bet Monica's parents were like, "Oh, well, he said he needs help. So
he said it.
He's fine. Let him go. Let him try to get help.
Release the burden."
Oh, my gosh. Sylvia, you need to be locked up.
After his arrest, Daniel led the detectives to the Port Authority baggage storage room where he produced a claim check for an Army duffel bag, which means that he would have had to hand this duffel bag to somebody if they give you a claim check, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, and here's my claim check, and they hand him back the Army duffel bag. Inside the bag was a white plastic bucket, and inside the bucket were skull and bones. Mm-hmm. Now, one expects the police to be extremely interested to find Daniel's friend from the Satanic Church in Brooklyn that was supposedly in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
While interrogating Sean and Sylvia, the cops mentioned several Satanic churches by name, but none of them were familiar to the couple. As far as Sean and Sylvia knew, they never met any of Daniel's Satanic friends, but they believed that the church existed. The police believed that Daniel's Satanic friend was imaginary, egging him on from the inside.
Mm.
When police were told there was a report that another man was present at the murder, an officer familiar with the case replied, "I don't believe that for a second." So they do not think that there was another person involved.
So it's probably like one of Daniel's personalities or something.
Yeah, something. Daniel Rakowitz was found not guilty by reason of insanity on February the 22nd, 1991. After 9 days of deliberations, the jury concluded that Daniel Rakowitz, a 30-year-old dishwasher and self-styled marijuana guru, suffered from mental disease or defect, and thus was not criminally responsible for the August 19th, 1989 murder of Monica Buell, whose skull he left in the baggage room at the Port Authority bus terminal in a bucket of kitty litter.
So if you're found not guilty by reason of mental illness or whatever, can they send you to hospital for treatment?
He is in a mental institution. Okay. He was sentenced to a mental institution.
Okay. So even though he was found not guilty because of that, I didn't know if it was like he's free to go and we hope that you get help.
No. He's not free. So after the jurors returned their verdict in state Supreme Court in Manhattan, Daniel thanked them and said, "I hope someday we can smoke a joint together."
Did he offer to cook for him?
No.
Oh, thank God.
No soup for you.
No soup for you. You just get pots.
He goes on to say, "I won't fault you for your verdict," said Daniel, who had frequently interrupted the 6-week trial with bizarre outbursts.
I bet.
"The prosecution had an overwhelming case against me, dude, but I'll be getting out soon, and I'll sell a lot of marijuana so I can bring justice to the people who actually committed this crime." Which would be you.
Yeah.
Smiling from the defense table at the judge, Daniel offered to smoke a joint with the judge, too.
Oh, my God.
The judge waved him off with an embarrassed smile, and he said, "This trial is a Lulu." Like, she was just like,
it's like, it's done. We're done.
This is a Lulu. Get this guy out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
oh, gosh. Did any jurors get his information for when he got out?
A finding that Daniel Rakowitz is not mentally responsible for the crime means he will remain in a state hospital for the criminally insane until a judge with the advice of psychiatrist finds he is no longer a danger to himself or to others.
Oh, that's good.
Since Daniel was a former mental patient, he stated during the trial that he would rather go to prison than a mental hospital because he did not like being medicated.
Hopefully they have like better treatments than just...
Well, he liked self-medication.
Yeah, that's true. I hope they didn't do shock therapy anymore in the 90s.
I don't think so.
They did.
No. No more lobotomies and no more
gosh
shock therapy. Ugh. Since the conclusion of his first trial in 1991, Daniel Rakowitz has been living in Kirby Forensic Psychiatric Center, a maximum security hospital on Ward's Island.
Mm-hmm.
And he did go through a sanity trial in 1995, but the jurors returned him back to the Kirby Center. They were like, "No go. You're still a nut job."
Nope. Yeah. You're not even on drugs anymore.
Mm-hmm. In 2004, while Daniel was seeking release from psychiatric custody, his ex-wife, the little Mexican girl.
Oh, I forgot all about her.
Came forward and she was talking about the relationship, which a psychiatrist detailed in a court testimony. Daniel's ex-wife alleged that she was 14 years old when the pair married, and that a controlling Daniel Rakowitz would chain her to the refrigerator when he went to work.
Oh, gosh.
The woman also said that Daniel bragged to her about previously decapitating a dog, strangling a prostitute, and taking out a woman's eye out of the socket with a screwdriver.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. In that same testimony, the acting director of the Kirby Forensic Psychiatric Center described how Daniel Rakowitz continued to exhibit controlling tendencies, even in a maximum security hospital, claiming that Daniel was known to hoard newspapers and only dole them out to patients that he felt were deserving of reading the news. Damn, Daniel!
Oh, man. Judging people inside.
Right? As far as I'm aware, Daniel is still confined to the mental institution and will hopefully spend the rest of his earthbound life there.
Oh, man, I hope so. If he gets out, I hope he never works in a restaurant.
Yeah, because he was a chef. Like, he was a cook or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Potato, patata. Oh, tomato, tomato. A finger of sausage. It's all the same. That's terrible, isn't it?
That is. It's disgusting.
Ugh. Poor.
And Sylvia, like, why wouldn't you tell somebody?
I don't know, Sylvia. We're mad at you.
Yeah.
I have zero respect for you. I know you wanted to help your friend, but that was not the correct way to do it, no matter
not
what.
Cool.
A woman is dead. Dead and cut up and eaten.
That, by other people unknowingly.
Unknowingly. Served to people unknowingly. No, you did wrong. Wrong, girl. All right. And thank you, Sean. Thank you.
Doing the right thing.
So that's it about the little American murdering cannibal.
Yeah, that's real.
Thompson Square Park.
That makes my stomach hurt.
I know. All right.
All right. So
we'll see you next week with another crazy bitch who is
unwell. Bye.
Bye.
We appreciate you listening to our podcast. If you liked it, please give us a good rating. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform with new releases every Friday. Just search for Bitch, I'm Not Well. Send us suggestions for an episode at b.tchimnotwell@gmail.com because Gmail won't let us use bitch. Or visit our website at www.bitchimnotwell.com. for more podcasts and our fabulous merchandise.
We'll see you next week on another podcast about another crazy bitch who is truly
unwell.